My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he is still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
Protections.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. All right. So if you are joining me here on the social media platforms, I greatly appreciate it. I'll get a post out, but the streaming company that I have used for the last, I don't know, many years, has finally done an update that they kept threatening to do. And so I am not streaming on TECN this morning. But we are live on our audio, and we are live on about six other different networks that we're associated with. And so we're glad to be with those, and I'll get a message out. But I just wanted to let those of you know that if you're looking for me on the website right now, you're not going to see me there at the moment. All right, I've got a great program lined up for you today. Dr. Carol Lieberman will be with me at the bottom of hour number two. A tragic story. F.L. Bubba Copeland. You may never have heard of him, but you have heard of this type of story, and we're going to dive into that and hopefully learn some things from it. Don Jans will be with me. We'll where do we turn? If last night's debate taught us anything, and I couldn't even stomach to, honestly, but at any rate, if it taught us anything, it taught us that we're in really deep trouble all the way around. Because the choices are slim to none. But there you go. Here's the choice. And I wrote this, actually. I put this out on my page this morning. And it's true. And it goes like this. Let me get the page to load. Love technology when it works. Here we go. One thing I've learned over the years, wounded people are wounded. Wounded people cause wounds, and wounded people get their wounds opened up by other wounded people. Most people have wounds and are therefore wounded people. So love like you would like to be loved, and know that Jesus Christ, by his stripes, heals wounds. Our only hope as a nation, our only hope, is to return to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, to come back to that foundation. That's it. And aside from that, but you know what? That is the greatest hope. Greatest. And what we have got to start doing is putting our trust and faith in that. Bottom of this hour also will be honoring Female Aviators and Veterans Day. But joining me now, and I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to have her on the program with me. She was an eyewitness to the events that took place on October 7th in Israel as she was in Jerusalem. She'll tell us in just a minute why she was there and what she experienced. I want to welcome, it's Dietrich. Am I saying that correctly? Did I?
Not with an E, with an I. Dietra.
Dietra. Okay. All right.
There you go.
Very perfect. Good. I want to welcome Dietra McGee to the program. Dietra, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here with you.
Well, first of all, let's begin. Tell me a little bit about what it was that had brought you to Jerusalem and your journey to go on that particular trip.
Back in 2015, my sister and I were looking for a way to celebrate her 60th birthday in a special way. And we started checking out various ways. And unknown to her, I had been checking out ways of places that had Jewish connections that I could go and perhaps minister there or just enjoy getting to know the Jewish culture, the Jewish people better. And it led me to an organization in Jerusalem that is called International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, ICEJ. And they were formed in 1950 because there was no embassy in Jerusalem. So a group of businessmen from around the world formed this embassy there in Jerusalem itself to be a connection between the Christians and the Jews of the area. So we were able to go over there and serve as they prepared for the Feast of Tabernacles celebration. And Nikki and I were put on the Seam Street team because we had some sewing background, and we made the costumes for the praise team and the ushers and things like that. So we spent a couple of weeks beforehand doing that, and then we're there as ushers for the events itself. a week-long celebration that they have each year. And so I was back that year by myself this time on the trip. My sister wasn't able to go. And my job at that point was to work with resources, you know, put out the books that they have for sale and the scarves and all the fun things like that and the toys. And so I had been there doing that, and I was scheduled to go home October 6th at almost a midnight flight. But after I scheduled that, they put out a bulletin. They were going to have a barbecue thank you for the volunteers on October the 7th. So I paid some extra money and changed my ticket for a day later at around midnight, which happened to be October the 7th.
Right.
So we were, that's why I was actually there at that time. And of course, we did not get to have our barbecue. Our day changed dramatically.
No, of course not. So tell me, it was about, now were you, because it was about 6:30 in the morning is when they started the shooting at the music festival and so on. But from what David shared with us in Tel Aviv, they did not, I mean, there were rockets coming in, which was normal. People don't realize, but Israel is always under that. David and I have talked about that for months. As a matter of fact, I went back yesterday. I might have shared that with you, but, you know, 29 weeks before this event happened, we shared that that Israel was already at war. It just hadn't materialized into what it did on the 7th of October. All that being said, because communications were knocked out, they didn't know how far in the terrorists had come. At what point were you awakened and made aware that Israel was under attack?
It was actually much later in the day before we got any word of that. We didn't have a habit of turning on our television in the morning. We weren't there to watch TV, so right. We had no idea anything like this was going to go on.
Sure.
So I was actually packing to head home, so I would be ready to leave as soon as we got back from the luncheon. And I believe it was about somewhere around 8:30, and we heard the alarms go off. Of course, we knew when you go to Israel, you know right. that when that sounds, you go to the bomb shelter, and you know where the bomb shelter is mm-hmm. if you're there any time at all.
First thing I understand that they show you is they say, okay, here's the kitchen, now here's the bomb shelter. And maybe even it's the bomb shelter and then the kitchen. I'm not, but it's somewhere in that general vicinity, as I understand it.
That is so true. And in our instance, they were right across the hall from each other. So everybody knew,
yeah.
you know, where to go. And there was a no panic. It was part of what amazed me about the whole thing is no one, even the visitors, who it might have been their first time there, but there was no panic, screaming you see on the TV shows and the movies. It was just a calm, okay, now we go to the bomb shelter. And it's a surreal feeling.
Now, one of the things that came out because of the fact that the bomb shelters are designed to protect from bombs, obviously not from terrorists breaking into your front door or walking into the house and then going room by room. The bomb shelters, as I understand it, that, you know, are not set up with locks and so on like we might assume here in America, right? I mean, every door in your house, you know, for the most part, right? You put a lock on it. We just do that. I don't know. It's always been that way. I'm 62 years old. That's how you do it. But that's not how it is over there relative to these bomb shelters in particular. Am I correct?
You're exactly right. The door to them, of course, is very heavy.
Right. Okay.
But I didn't observe any locks inside or out. And it's like going to the basement. It's a concrete room with chairs and a table or two sometimes. And it's just a fact of life over there. Of course, at this time, we had no idea the slaughter was going on. We had no idea that the music festival had been that scene that it was. We only knew the sirens were going off there in Jerusalem. So as we went down to the shelter, and as I think we'd been there, I don't want to guess how long, but less than a minute, a few seconds, and we could hear bombs going off, but we could tell that they were exploding overhead because it sounded more like
Iron Dome.
One of those hand cannons.
What do you call
those things that you shoot off at the 4th of July.
Right, like an M-80 or something like that.
It was like a...
Yeah.
And okay. So it was being intercepted. We heard several of those. And the way it works, you go into the bomb shelter when the alarm sounds, and after it goes off, you wait 5 minutes, and if it's off still, then you go back to packing your suitcase.
Whatever you were doing, right, right.
Exactly.
Just back to life.
Back to life. And it's very interesting. I found that watching the people around me was very interesting. Most of the people that were in, well, all of the people actually that were in our bomb shelter area were Christians.
Okay.
About the third or fourth time that we were sent to the bomb shelter, that area was filled by the time I got there, and they ushered us to an adjoining room, and it was filled with the Jewish people.
Okay.
Which we didn't even know they were there at the time.
Okay.
But this was Shabbat, so there were families that spend that whole time in the hostel. We were staying in the Rabin hostel.
Absolutely.
Facility.
Sure.
And that's their lifestyle, is to come there over the weekend, and so mom doesn't have to cook or anything.
Right.
And so there were children, and this particular area was partitioned off with a little lattice type thing. And the women were in one side with the children and the men were in the other side, and they had their prayer shawls on They were praying. They were reading from the Torah and praying. So that was very interesting. I felt like I was kind of intruding. They didn't make me feel that way.
Sure.
It wasn't that they made me feel. I just felt like I knew I was in their territory,
their space, area. Yeah.
And yes, it was very, it was humbling to watch them. The children were very quiet. I didn't see terror on anybody's face, just concern. And of course, not smiling and chit chatting, very somber.
Right.
But the lack of apparent fear was there. And I was never afraid during this time, which was kind of strange because we knew there were bombs that were being aimed at us.
Right.
But there was this beautiful peace that was there. And I thought later, of course, it was easy for me to have peace. This is not my lifestyle. When I go back home, I have a basement, but I don't have to run to it in a 15-second notice.
Sure.
So I think I've learned almost as much about what happened since I got home as I learned when I was actually there, just thinking about all of it.
At what point did you and those around you become aware that this was more than just, the routine, if you will? And I know that sounds, I don't know, like I'm not giving it the significance, but for the people in Israel, and I think people need to understand that this is normal. The bomb shelter visits, the bombs overhead, all of this has been going on because they have said to the sea. That is their mantra. And you can't have peace with to the sea, period. You can't give them, they gave them space, and look what they did. But at what point did the news of the horrific events that had happened and this and the and the and that they Israel was at war. When did that real revelation hit?
It was actually at least a couple of hours before we really began to understand. And I don't think we got the full understanding of it while I was there. I don't think we understood the gross atrocities, the depth of the evil that was being battered on Israel during this time. Only after we got home and saw the news clips and things, because we stayed very busy bouncing back and forth from the bomb shelter,
okay,
and talking about what was going on in the hostel. There are a great number of soldiers who go through training, and they are housed there. And so we were accustomed on many of our meals to seeing the soldiers in the meal in the hall with us, of course, in a little bit different section. But so we would see all these young soldiers. Mm-hmm. They had to be the 18-year-olds, the new soldiers, men and women. And of course, they were pretty jovial during the time.
Sure.
But then about, I think perhaps it was around 10, 11 o'clock, we noticed the soldiers back, which usually we didn't see them during the day. We saw them at breakfast and then at dinner.
Okay.
But they were back, and they were in the waiting area, the lobby area, which was pretty large, and had their bags packed. Very somber at that point, very serious, very quiet area. And so we knew that something far bigger than just a few stray bombs had made their way over. And we started hearing things here and there from that point.
So at that point, there was a change in the demeanor of the soldiers. And how did that impact the other individuals that you were with? Did you see any more of the Jewish people that you had encountered in one of your trips to the bomb shelter at that point?
No, pretty much. I think the Jews had gone home. There might be an occasional one or two there, but mostly the lobby was full of the soldiers and then the Christian groups that had been housed there.
Okay.
There was a respectful reverence more than fear, but there was also this, it's very hard to describe. I don't know that we have words that describe some of the things that war brings about. I think maybe we need to invent some that might explain it better.
That might speak to that. Well, I can only imagine, you're especially for the Jewish people and the people, living there in Israel, you're talking about an area that's, 40 by 20, 40 miles by 20 miles. The closing in of a 20 mile strip can happen quite rapidly. And the intensity of the bombing, I think, was, you're talking about thousands of missiles that were fired in, whereas normally they might have 50 to 100. And that had to be, significantly different. How many times have you been to Israel now?
This was my fifth time.
Okay.
I went on two. The first time I went with my brother and his church, just on what you would call a standard tourist trip.
Okay.
Then Nikki and I went on our first time with ICEJ and worked that time. We didn't get to see very much. I wish that she had been able to see more of the land since I had seen Masada and, a great many of those places.
Sure.
But then the third time I went back with Nikki, and we went on a tour, but it was much different than your normal tour. The gentleman that was hosting us, and there were two, but the main one was a friend of ours who was an archaeologist there in Israel, and his name was John Melanson. He has since passed away this last January, and a big loss. But he had served there in Israel. He was from Texas, actually.
Okay.
You know where Mount Enterprise is, by any chance? Up near, not too far from the Arkansas border.
Hmm.
But he had he took us on places that your normal tour doesn't get to go on. So I would encourage your readers, if you mm-hmm. get a chance, go on an unusual tour. He took us to the Israeli Antiquities Authority. Mm-hmm. We got to tour that and see so many of the old things that they've collected from there, and the history comes alive. Of course, we went to Yad Vashem, and we got to go some parts of the land that they don't normally take tour buses because there's not space for a lot of tour buses.
I think it's going to be a while, Dietra, before anybody's going to be over there taking any tours.
Unfortunately. I hope not. I have a theory, and I'll wait and see if it comes to pass. But I think once this war is over, that it will settle down fairly quickly for a time, and it will probably be the safest time to visit Israel when this is completely over, because everybody that wants to destroy them will be building their stockpiles up again. But usually there's big war, then there's peace. Well, their definition of peace, which mm-hmm. is you have a few more seconds to get to the bomb shelter.
Yeah. Well, I think their goal this time is not to leave any of those people standing. They're not.
I think that's an admirable goal.
They're not going to leave. They're not going to stop till Hamas is done. And they're not going to stop till Hezbollah is done. And at this point, since Yemen has decided to jump in and the Houthis, they're not going to stop till the Houthis are done.
It would be nice to have a lot of that evil rid for a time. It sure would.
Yeah, I would agree.
I was studying in Second Kings, I think it was chapter 13, but in Second Kings where Elisha, was it told the king, talking about going to battle. And the basic thing I got from it, I won't go through the whole thing, but the basic thing was that Elisha's king, the king that he was ministering to, stopped too soon. He told him, strike the ground with the arrows.
Right.
And he stopped too soon. He didn't use the whole quiver mm-hmm. of arrows. And then Elisha told him, if you had used the whole quiver, this enemy would have been destroyed and done away with,
yep.
but because you didn't do all you could now in preparation.
Yeah. You're going to have a problem.
Fight them again.
Prim is came into the whole entire Esther story happened because of the disobedience of Saul when it came to, destroying the Amalekites. There is a point at which God, uses his people to rid the earth of certain evil. And ultimately, what we need to help people to understand is when Jesus Christ comes back, it's not going to be on one of those horses with a horn and spreading candy canes and flowers. He's going to come back with fire in his eyes and a sword. And he is going to destroy all evil. And if you are a part of that evil, you're going to be destroyed, period.
Exactly. And that was important for us for me as a person, because as a mom, as a female, I lean very heavily on the mercy side and not the battles, the wars.
Yeah.
And so, I'd like to think that everyone's going to be saved, but they won't be and it's because of their choice. It's not that God says, no, you can't be. It's a choice thing.
It is absolutely a choice. Dietra, thanks for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it. I've got to get my next guest on. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. I'm glad you're home. I'm glad you're safe. And we will continue to watch what's taking place.
Thank you. Great pleasure to be here with you.
All right. God bless you. We're going to take our break. We'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio. We're going to honor female aviators coming up here on Chosen Generation Radio right after this brief break. Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen-size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king-size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
So up next, we have CleanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. CleanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
Nope.
Wow.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And, of course, Monday is Veterans Day. And and as a veteran, we honor, as a disabled veteran, we honor all veterans and are grateful for their service. And we have a lot of veterans that are in need of our love and our support. Especially because we've had 20 years of wars, My next guest is here to help us identify and honor a particular group of veterans that oftentimes are overlooked. And I want to welcome to the program Graciela Tescarano Sato, also known as Captain Mama. And I thank you for being with me today. It's truly a pleasure to have you on the program to talk about female aviators.
Yeah, well, Pastor Greg, thank you so much for your interest in celebrating this Veterans Day weekend together. I really appreciate that, especially with the fellow vet. It's always nice.
You know, you were talking to me a little bit in the green room about, you know, the generation that's coming up. And we talk a lot about the indoctrination and the things that they're being told and all of the stuff that's going on in our schools, which is detrimental to our families and all those things. But one of the things that's happening is they're not being taught to have a sense of pride, and a good pride. You know, I ask people all the time, I say, well, who was the first nationalist? You might think about that, but who's the first nationalist?
Yeah, I love it.
First nationalist was God. God was the first nationalist, and he said to Abram, I'm going to make nations out of your seed. Go ahead.
Well, and, you know, to your point about the young people, you know, that might be true, but it's also, there's other awesome things happening. I'll just tell you, on Tuesday, I was the keynote speaker at a middle school here in Northern California, where it was an eighth grade assembly, the orchestra, the band, the choir, everybody was involved to celebrate Veterans Day. And it's a tradition they've had for a long, long time. The Daughters of the American Revolution were there. VFW was there, the American Legion. The mayor spoke. She's a veteran. So there's many communities where they do these. It's not a small assembly. It was a district-wide assembly to celebrate service.
And I'm from Northern California. And I love hearing this, because when I was a kid growing up, we were all about red, white, and blue. When I grew up in the Bay Area, I grew up in San Leandro.
I'm right by there. I'm like in the Hayward Castro Valley area. That's hilarious. We're like neighbors.
Yeah.
But we still are. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's not everything that we hear is true. And I'm telling you firsthand, I'm in a lot of schools that's all about the red, white, and blue. I mean, it's, you know, it's Veterans Day, so that's why. But it was really beautiful. It was a unifying event because there was seriously a World War II veteran there. He made it. It was like 98. He made it to the event. And then all the way up to, you know, daughters of Vietnamese immigrants who are currently serving. And it was, everybody was there. It was beautiful. So it is still happening. They're still getting a good message. And again, service before self was the message. And I had them raise their hands, you know, how many of you are scouts and how many of you are doing community service? So all that is still very much alive and well in places where people think it is not. And I saw it for myself just on Tuesday this week. So another proof point.
No. Hey, you know what? Hearing those stories, we need to hear them because it's encouraging, right? It's encouraging to know that, you know, that
interview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and
300 interviews of veterans on the wall. So they interviewed 300 veterans and they put their pictures and their stories and a quote all over the wall. So it was a really big celebration. You would have loved it.
I know I would have loved it. No doubt about it. No, that is really, really joyous to hear. Well, you know, Californians, I mean, I left California about 12 years ago. But we lived in Modesto after that. I grew up in the Bay Area, but we lived in Modesto for 18 years. And we, you know, I mean, I was a part of, you know, pushing, you know, traditional family values and those kinds of things. And we fought that. And the bulk of the citizens of California up until that point, for sure, were voting for traditional values. It's just the radical judiciary was overturning our votes.
And the population has changed significantly in the last 40 years. So that's the other part.
Well, yeah.
By the way, I didn't grow up here. So you have something different than me. I grew up in Colorado.
Okay.
And I actually came here on an Air Force ROTC scholarship. My short intro that I can use here is I'm the daughter of my immigrants. So it's very short. The daughter of Mexican immigrants who became an Air Force officer and military aviator. That's my one-liner. I grew up in Colorado. My mom and dad are from Ciudad Juarez and Madera, Chihuahua. And I was the oldest of five kids. So I was trying to figure out how to go to college. And I asked my counselor, how can I go to college? It's the magic question that I teach everywhere I go. You don't know how to do something? Parents haven't been to college? Ask the magic question. And then I attracted the answer. And my counselor's husband was an Air Force major. So Major Wendell Burgess guided me and mentored me to applying for the Air Force ROTC scholarship to go to college, four-year scholarship. And my counselor mentored me to do the actual application process. So that's how I got to California, from a little town in Colorado called Greeley. And I went 1,000 miles away to UC Berkeley, my number one school for architecture and aerospace studies.
That's interesting. So if you were in Greeley, then Jesse Ramirez was your bus driver when you were in school.
Oh my God, I know that name.
Yeah, that's my wife's.
So weird that you
that's my
that.
Well, that's my wife's uncle.
I totally know that name. Small tiny world.
It's getting smaller by the moment. Yeah, my wife is Mexican American, and my in-laws actually were part of going and harvesting all across the country they're from Texas, but up to Colorado and all through the produce belt. So wow. My kids are then Latinx is the new term.
Yeah.
But my eldest daughter actually has moved down to Mexico.
Wow. Well, and that's it. You know, I always say this, you know, the census has counted 60 million Hispanics, you know, the government word. Mm-hmm. We're ethnically Latinos and Latinas, but Latinx is, you know, just to be shorter and more inclusive. So Hispanic as a word, as a, you know, political category to count the people with from countries of origin doesn't mean we were born there, but, you know, our lineage goes back there, right?
Right.
To count us, if 60 million. But, you know, I know plenty of people, like a colonel in the Air Force named Danielle Hoffman. Do you think she's Latina? She is. How about Cheryl Schaefer? Also Latina. So we have a lot of names that, you know, mom was Latina, but then she uses the dad's name. So I think there's so many more. And I always say that you will have Latino grandchildren.
Well,
we, you know, we were always here.
And you know what? And that's all a part. I mean, I'm Italian on my mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm German on my dad's side, and I'm Italian and English. So I'm Italian, English, and German. I'm like World War III. It's or World War II. It's kind of
tell me your Italian name.
Demelli. Demelli.
With a Z.
Demelli.
Demelli. Oh, see, so that's it. You cannot tell by a person's name. Okay, I am very obvious with my name. I look, see, like Tiscareño Sato. Like,
right.
I want you to know that I'm Tiscareño, and then I married a Japanese man, so I'm hyphenated. This is very California. And I want you to know that I'm Tiscareño. Otherwise, I would be Grace Sato, and I say, I'm not Grace Sato. That's a lady from Korea, right?
Okay.
It's not me. So I'm going to say Tiscareño Sato, and I do that very intentionally because, again, names don't tell you everything, and especially in the service. If we're going to talk about Latina serving, I just gave you the example of Cheryl Schaefer, whose mom served in the Army. She served in the Army. And when I met her, I never knew she was Latina. And then she told me, oh, but my last name is actually, you know, like Oliveras. I'm like, oh. So I'm just saying we have such a beautiful, long, rich history of serving Latinas do. Mm-hmm. But like you said in your intro, Pastor Greg, it is not what you see on Top Gun Maverick. You know, I like to say I represent the military aviators that don't look like Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many of us. And, you know, I have a friend in North Carolina, Olivia Chavez. She served in the Marines for 8 years, went to college, and then became a Chinook helicopter pilot in the Army. Okay, so we're everywhere. We serve so many places, and I just want that visibility, which is why I adopted the Captain Mama idea. My son inspired me to write, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. You know, the literature
and it's all about the American heritage, because what it shows is that America is a land of opportunity. America is a land that gives people who are willing to put in the work, who are willing to dedicate themselves, the opportunity to be able to have that success. And it doesn't matter, red, brown, yellow, black, or white, everyone can be successful because that's the system that we've created, which I think is so absolutely wonderful. And we should celebrate each other's successes, yes, right? You know,
and you know, yes, thank you for saying it that way, because that's exactly it. But the other thing is that unless you ask that magic question, well, okay, so how can I get the scholarship? How right. can I go to college?
Sure.
How can I fly? I put the responsibility on the kids and on the teenagers when I go to schools. Like if I had not been asking the question of how can I go to college and how can I get a scholarship, no one's going to approach me in the hallway and say, hi, would you like some scholarship information? Can I give you all the answers? No. Right. The responsibility is on you to ask the questions, because the opportunities exist. And you need to be asking the questions to go get the answers. You can't just sit back and go, well, I've heard it's possible, but I don't know how to do it. Right. And so mentorship, you know, having that adult that cares, that opens up their heart to you. Like my counselor invited me to her house for dinner. Hmm. And that's where I met her husband. So she had a huge heart, and she knew, she saw the potential in me. She saw the question. She saw the fire. How can I go to college? I'm the oldest of five kids born to Mexican immigrants. I don't know how to do this.
Right.
You know what? My husband, he'll tell you.
Yeah,
and
we'll show you.
I just did the clothing change very intentionally.
I see that.
So that I can make this point. You know, when I was at the school this week in Los Gatos, they did these beautiful interviews of the veterans, and they posted them on the wall. And
I know Los Gatos.
Yeah, so you know Los Gatos Unified? Okay, well, that's where I was. I was at Fisher Middle School.
Awesome.
And they have this beautiful tradition of interviewing veterans, and then they put their photos, their bio, their service, a picture, and then one of the quotes from the interview. And as I counted them, like for every 50 interviews of men, there was one woman. And a teacher friend had actually tipped me off to the interview part. So I was looking at everything. And I was like, wow, we really need to show up. We really need to show the women. So this is why I changed my clothes just now, because I made the point there that, you know, when you interview veterans, first of all, look for women. And number two, because we're out here. And number two, we are multifaceted people. Look at you. You served during the Cold War and you did Russian, and you were telling me about that. And now you have your own show. You're a media creator. Every veteran I know is doing something else career-wise, because we had to get out, right? And so I tell the kids, we literally take off the uniform, which is why I dramatically did this, become someone else, right?
Right.
We become a civilian. We dress up. We go to tech. We go to work. We go to school. And so I became Captain Mama. After writing the children's books, and I'm sure you're going to ask.
Well, and I would, and that's a great segue into that. So tell us about the books that you have written. We got about 10 minutes left to do that. Tell us about the books that you've written and what the focus is of the books that you've put together.
So I start with giving props to my son, who saw me in my flight suit. This is my flight suit hanging behind me, by the way, the other uniform I no longer wear. And I take these to air shows now, and kids put them on. We'll talk about that. But my son saw me wearing this before Veterans Day, and we basically had a conversation that led to the writing of Goodnight, Captain Mama, Buenas noches, Capitán Mama. And this is a bedtime story where the child sees mom in a flight suit, is fascinated by the patches, pulls them off, and she's able to, you know, answer his questions and talk about her service through the colorful patches. And it was literally that night when he left and he said, I love you, Captain Mama, that I started writing. And I started asking, do women even write books for kids about their service? And I found exactly zero. So I'm the first to do it.
Wow.
And we also include activity in the back so that kids, again, what we were talking about before, now learning, oh, I'm a part of something. Let me do a patch for my school, for my scout group, for my church group, for my team, whatever. And then they create these patches at schools and air shows, and it's a way for kids to, you know, become part of that. You know, I am part of a group, and I can design something to reflect it. So that was, the little boy goes to sleep wondering, I wonder if my mom will take me to the jet. A few years later, we put out the second in the trilogy, which is La Sorpresa de Capitán Mamá, Captain Mama Surprise. Now we're at the KC-135, their aerial refueling tanker that I served on. And it's a field trip, because what's a flying gas station? And like, what is that? Nobody knows. So kids and adults are fascinated. And I'll show you my favorite illustration by Linda Lenz, whose father served in the Air Force too, my illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my tanker, KC-135s. And then it's a beautiful illustration. We make bookmarks out of this. But it continues the story of, like, the airplane and the fuel tanks and the fuel panel and all the technical words. And Pastor Greg, it's fully in English, fully in Spanish, glossary of technical words about the airplane, and a glosario en español about the words of the part. So you can say landing gear and learn to say tren de aterrizaje. So really celebrating multilingualism and the fact that, you know, you can speak Spanish and learn to fly airplanes. And then we took it into the air. We launched this in Houston at the air show last October, Wings Over Houston. Despegando con Capitán Mamá, taking flight. And now you see little Marco. It's all in the boy's voice. It's the child's voice. He's so excited to go fly with his mom. And that's what we do. We fly together, and the kids see refueling of stealth fighters, F-117s and F-22s. And again, fully English, fully Spanish. And then my son designed the world's first bilingual origami, including the children's book. English, Spanish, fold your own F-22 fighter jet.
Very cool.
This is the first series that shows that Latinas are aviators and veterans, that mothers are aviators and veterans, and yeah, that women are serving. So it's very intentional, coming from my heart, from my service, to really put imagery out there that celebrates that fact that we are serving. We've always been serving, way back since, you know, Civil War.
Right. In one form or another. Yeah. In one form or another. Yeah. Certainly. There's, you know, and
matches.
Yeah.
That match the books, because it all started with Patches. And as a scout mom, who doesn't love Patches? So, yeah.
Well, I did the clothing. Which teach you to the work and teach you to earn. Yes. And the requirements that are necessary. So there's an individual aspect of effort that brings about a net result. And you have to apply yourself in order to do it. And then there's the creativity as well that's associated with that. So you've got an overarching patch, but then your path to that patch might be different because of the particular task that you choose to pursue in order to obtain that particular patch.
Exactly. And even, you know, on the name badge here, I'll go ahead and pull it off. People are always asking me at air shows, how do I get a flight suit? How much does it cost? So I go, graduate high school, go to college or the academy, get selected to fly, and then actually graduate. And that's how you get free flight suits.
There you
but
go.
Then I say, and then when you show up, you just have your name. You just have that, right? When you're training, you just have your name. And should you be in the 75% of the class that graduates, then you get your wings. And then to your point about earning, you don't get the star until you've been in the air for 1,500 hours. So the star comes from, you know, a certain level of amount of flying that you're doing. And then, of course, all the medals and things come from specific campaigns and all of that. So you're right. It's all about the earning. It's a beautiful way to tell that story through simple, colorful insignia that catches the child's eye. In case you're wondering what this is, you know, I did the dramatic clothing change. You know, some of us get the veteran hat. So I do wear the veteran hat at air shows, but I'm putting this on because, you know, I am so Latina and I'm so bilingual that air show organizers now are asking me to announce shows in Spanish. So I made up a new word called avión narradora, which means narrator of airplanes, like the lady that talks about airplanes. And I did the air show in Hillsboro, Oregon in May. And because you're in D.C., I want you to know Andrews Air Force Base is having an air show next spring. And I would love your listeners to pick up the phone and call the public affairs office and say, hey, can you guys make sure you invite Captain Mama and maybe have Spanish language narration? And then I can be up on the platform, Facebook Live, partner with a local radio station in Spanish language. And then all of the action that you see in the sky can be brought. You can go bilingual with your air show. It's time.
Well,
I got asked to do it. So yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, certainly, it is encouraging, to bring other people in and get them engaged and get them involved. I know, you know, I mean, you know, we want people to be able to communicate with one another. And I know that our program's not about talking about language things. And I think language is important. I think, you know, people learning a common language, and we've always we've always learned English in here. Unfortunately, we don't have good English being taught in our schools anymore. But that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah, it is another topic. But yeah, I always like to say, yeah, well, of course, we want to be able to communicate with each other, and we do learn that in school. We do.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we have to lose our heritage language. And in a global economy, it would be ridiculous for us to do so. I'll just use the example of China. In China, you graduate from college and you speak at least three languages. And their national plan includes educating 200 million of their citizens to graduate from college by 2030. That's 200 million. That's larger than the entire United States workforce.
Yeah.
200 million young Chinese students all speaking three languages, college educated. Where do you think they're going to go work? They're going to want to come here. They're going to want to go to Europe. So we can't be stuck in this monolingual place. We cannot. We must learn other languages. So, of course, we're going to learn English. I'm right here. I started kindergarten speaking Spanish.
With all due respect, we also better be very careful about recognizing what the CCP's overall plan is as well. And I would not hold up the CCP as a moniker of liberties or freedom.
Purely speaking about multilingual capabilities and their necessity in global economies in which we are.
Right.
And so that is why it's important. You know, everybody I ever flew with in the Air Force, because, you know, I told you my story, I ended up getting a scholarship, went to Berkeley. Halfway through, I got the orientation flight at Williams Air Force Base, and they put me with a lady pilot. This was my third time in my life I was ever even on an airplane. The first two times happened in college. I was never on a jet as a kid. Again, seven people, that's a lot of money for an airline ticket. We never flew.
Okay? Sure.
So halfway through college, I got this flight with this lady pilot at Air Force Base, and she's the one who said, this is something you can do. You're the only person I flew with today who didn't throw up. And I was like, what? And I had so much fun. I was giggling, and I thought it was so fun. And so she put the idea in my head that I can go get selected for pilot training, navigator training, all the different trainings for wings. You didn't know. And I was already halfway through college.
Right.
So, again, that opportunity is there, but not if I don't know about it.
Absolutely.
And so I was in the moment that
absolutely
she told me, so I pursued it. And I could have said no, too scary, but I pursued it, and I was selected for navigator
training. Well, your statement about multi-language is important, because if America is going to continue to lead, then we are going to need to be able to have communication skills in multiple languages when we lead on a global stage as well as on a national stage. And so, you know, the thrust towards education is critically important. And I guess to me, the biggest message that I draw from all of this is the opportunities are there. That's the greatest thing. The opportunities are there, and the freedom to be able to make those choices and choose to pursue those dreams is something that we hold dear here that doesn't exist. As you know, as I know, traveling around the world, you recognize that in other countries, you don't have the freedom. They tell you this is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to learn. This is what you're going to learn. And then all of a sudden people come and begin to find out what is really going on. Oh, well, wait a minute. They lied to us. Your opportunity
and
here.
And also you're born into a class structure. Like, I remember serving in the embassy in Quito, Ecuador, when I was an officer. I got an assignment down there for 4 months. And I remember, like, you're born into a class structure. Like, I remember this man saying to me, if God wanted me to be an educated person, he would have had me be born to a rich family. Because there is no upward mobility.
Well,
you're born wealthy.
Yeah,
that's it.
And just let me close, because we're final minute, but I do a lot of ministry in India. And in particular in Punjab, and they have a caste system.
Yep.
And one of the things that my preaching over there has done is break the caste system. We now have people from all different levels that are interacting with our pastors over there. And that is never before happened ever. We literally had the entire Christian member, all different denominations, come to our church to hear the gospel for the first time in the history of Punjab. First time in the history. So yeah.
That's a beautiful example of opportunities exist.
Amen.
If you bring them to other people.
Amen.
If you bring them to other people,
yep.
Because a kid like and me teach is hope. Not going
to. I got to jump to my next guest, as you know. Oh. Hey, this has been wonderful. Captain Mama, quickly, where do they get the books?
CaptainMama.com.
Bingo.
Best place, and you can find me on Instagram. On Instagram, it's very easy. Captain Mama, Capitan Mama, all together on Instagram.
All right. CaptainMama.com. All the information you need, including the books. Captain Mama, I salute you. Thanks for being with me.
I salute you back, Pastor Greg.
Awesome to have you with me. We'll take our break. We'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio. Don Jans joins me on the other side. Where do we find that hope? We'll be back right after this.